Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles. Hey, so usually we have, a topic where we have a couple people, a panel talking about an issue. But today we're, just kind of curious what's been happening with Chris Gagnon. So Chris, first of all, you're in a place right now that doesn't have a lot of internet. Where are you talking to us from right now?
Hi, Randy. Well, so about 3 years ago, a little bit more than 3 years ago, I was actually making a film for a nonprofit organization in Tanzania. And I was just there for a couple of weeks. And in that time, I was one of the people that I was interviewing and spending time with, I happened to have fallen in love with. And so she said, and she's also from the US, but she was saying, oh, I've been working in this organization for a few years now. I'm looking for another job also in East Africa. And I think you should move here.
So you're in East Africa right now.
I'm East Africa, Southern Africa, depending on how you put the country. Also, some people call it Central Africa. Yeah, so I moved to Malawi about 3 years ago. And yeah, it's a great country. It's a really beautiful country. It's super undeveloped, being landlocked. It hasn't had a lot of business that came this way. And when Europe was in Africa colonizing, 150 years ago, and they just didn't have a lot of use for Malawi. So there's just wasn't a lot built here. There wasn't a lot of infrastructure. And so, yeah, it's like 93% of the country are farmers. My wife works with farmers, and yeah, I'm here and figuring out what making videos here is like. So yeah, it's been a really nice 3 years. Also difficult for internet reasons, for electricity reasons. Water going out is not always the most fun thing, but
yeah,
it's overall a lovely place.
All right, so we're going to dive into all that. Thank you for sharing that. And, thanks for making it work and being here throughout, all the issues to get here. So what, you graduated in 2011, right?
Yeah, in December of 2011.
All right. So last I remembered, and one of the reasons I really wanted to talk to you is you had been one of the students that I really liked, watching your films, especially like as we got to the showcases, right? Like you would always put up like really heartfelt, really unique films. And, always were one of the people, to watch and say like, all right, like Chris is going to have just a cool career. And you really have had just like this incredible journey that like I've had a lot of fun watching on Facebook, and I'm really excited to share with the people viewing today. So after Grand Valley, kind of take us through kind of maybe your senior year into like what launched your career.
Sure. So at my time at Grand Valley, I had an internship with a communications and PR company in Southfield, Michigan. And when I graduated, they offered me a job. And so I worked there for, I guess, maybe 2 years. And that was like a run and gun. Like you wake up, you go to a shoot, you come back, you edit it in the afternoon, and then you post it to their social media account, like either that evening or the next morning. So it was like every day making films. And that was just at the time, this is 2012, 2013. So it was like when a lot of companies were starting to be like, oh, we need to take social media seriously. So it was companies like GM, DTE, Blue Cross Blue Shield Michigan, who were trying to get their Facebook pages active, YouTube pages. So, but when I think about that time, I really think about, even though I was doing some After Effects in college, like those couple years outside, there's a lot of time spent with After Effects and just like being able to learn. And I had a lot of opportunities to like, when I needed to look something up, I was on Video Copilot. Yeah, that was a formative time, especially because it created a really intense pace of work. After a couple of years of doing that, I had someone who had actually saw the work I do for fun and was like, oh, this guy seems real crazy and interesting, and maybe we could have him edit some of our films. And so that was working in Detroit with a organization called Order and Other, and they were doing all of Shinola's films at the time.
And that's the big watch company in Detroit, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that was really cool because we were a small team, and we were getting like, we were, renting really nice cameras, really nice lenses. And that was like a very different style of production. I remember after that first job where it was like every day turning over a video, that next job, they were telling me, slow down, you're going too fast. Like, like everything just feels maybe like path of least resistance. So like you need to like make the viewer really like pause, turn, think, ask themselves the question. They're always talking about like the mystery box and like just all these like essentially really taking a lot of keys from like documentaries rather than advertising. And so that was a really cool experience. Like I remember, yeah, some of those first edits, like you have a month, like you need to be here every, you need to be working on this every day for a month. And we just want to see like an amazing film at the end.
Which I didn't really have flash from that, you know, first job that you had, right?
Mm-hmm. I didn't have really a roadmap of what am I going to do if I needed to edit a video for 30 days? And yeah, there's a lot more footage. There's a lot more to look through, but yeah, I really had to kind of make a roadmap for what does a 30-day edit look like? And there was, you know, massive amounts of footage for some of these, even though they were maybe 5-minute films. And I had a really good time doing that. I mean, the production quality was able to be so much higher, which is...
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I saw you with a red camera in one of those shots, which, you know, especially in 2012 was like, it's pretty, pretty awesome equipment. Like,
yeah,
super cool.
And we shot a lot with you. We shot a lot with Alexa and they were renting like $50,000 lenses, which I was coming from shooting on a T2i or something like that to having like, you know, the Alexa like, oh, you want to take this home tonight and keep it at your house? I'm like, yeah, I'll take that home. I'll shoot a couple of things. So that was just like a really interesting, I felt like a kid in a candy shop for those couple of years working with them.
Yeah, a little different than meeting with you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but when you had been in school, you were making a lot of fiction stuff, right? So like even then coming right out of college, these weren't necessarily the films that you were making as a student, right?
Yeah. And actually the vision when I graduated and even through all of these, so I've kind of walked through 4 years now. Through those 4 years, the plan was always I'm saving up money. I'm moving to California. I was also making a lot of films at home for fun. I was trying to get better at VFX. I kind of had this vision that I was going to write movies. I was going to make them super low budget. I wanted to like really have my hands in everything and control everything. And so I actually wrote a couple feature length scripts in that point. And I was I felt like I was building up to move to California. And when I had the access to all these, you know, nice cameras and these, you know, having these long time to edit, I was like, oh, well, this is great. I'm establishing a reel. I'm going to, you know, like, this is so much more impressive than showing up with like these one day turnaround, you know, PR pieces, advertising pieces that were just like more for a Facebook page. Like these are like beautiful films. So I was like, this is good. I'm going to move to California. These will help me get a little bit more like credentials because they're, you know, they're these beautiful, like almost documentary style advertisements, but
yeah, which
yeah, that was still the vision.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I relate a lot to that story too. I had also, you know, done fiction in college and then had, you know, kind of that same, you know, kind of 4 year period where I was like, all right, I'm going to do some documentaries, like local documentaries and going to eventually get out to California, right? Like everything's like a stepping stone to do that. But I mean, I personally fell in love with documentary and telling those stories. There was, you know, one particular documentary that like, you know, I was just editing the footage that we had done and just like really emotionally connected to it. And I was like, this is a whole different world than what I had been doing. Did you feel some of that love for documentary yourself, or were you still kind of like grinding to get through it, you know, throughout those 4 years?
Definitely. I think like, especially with movies, like I don't remember exactly when Exit Through the Gift Shop came out, but like there was a lot of really amazing documentary content that was becoming available in those next couple of years after university that was inspiring. And also when I was working with Order and Other, the managers there were just like essentially having me watch documentaries constantly and like good ones too. And we would even like sometimes in the office just watch like really interesting documentaries. And that was, I guess, did change a little bit of my vision. I also started to suspect that I didn't have enough maybe life experience. I was just like, you know what? I think that maybe when I'm writing these films, they're all a little bit more basic than I would like them to be. And I was like, I don't know if I have enough life experience to write anything interesting from a fiction standpoint. So I started to think more about, oh, well, maybe when I'm young and obviously there's amazing people making fiction films from a very young age, but for my own self, I was just like, I'm not mature enough to write something that's actually going to last, that I'll still like in a couple of years. So I thought, documentaries get, because you can jump into other people's life experiences. And yeah, I guess I just started to slowly drift into that direction. It's also just a lot easier. I mean, well, obviously documentaries have their own challenges, but in terms of like getting a crew together and like, oh, let's interview this really interesting person and see where it goes. And then, you keep on pulling that thread. It's easy to get started with something like that, as opposed to like having, the vision of fiction and then, moving forward on a fiction film, right? It's just feels like it takes a much bigger effort. I don't know. Are you following?
Everything's from scratch for sure. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like the words are from scratch. The shots are from scratch. Even the people in the shots are from scratch, right? Everything is like, has to be placed there for sure. But I mean, at the same time, your first like documentary, that I know about was about you and your brother going across the United States on a bicycle. So even so, like your life was still interesting enough to be filming yourself. How did that come to be? Where did that even come from?
So I was living in Ferndale and I was commuting like 10 miles a day on my bicycle to work every day. And my brother was also living in Ferndale working in downtown Detroit. So we were doing that every day, even in the winter. I think we had the cutoff at like 15 degrees, like we can't run. So we were just racking up a lot of miles. We're like, we could really do something. Like this is better than just saving gas. Like we were both trying to pay off some student debt at that time. So we're like trying to live as cheap as possible. And so it's like, we could probably do something with all these miles we're accruing. It's like, well, what might we do? And I had the idea of riding across the country. And he was like, okay, yeah. So, I mean, it was just nice that we were both in a time of life where we could figure out a way to take 6 weeks off work. I think in the end, I asked my boss, I said, I'd really like to ride across the country. And they came back to me and they said, okay, you have 45 days. And I was reading all these blogs about it. And it's like, we did it in 90 days. We did it in 80 days, 70 days, And I was just like, 45. So that broke down and it ended up breaking down to almost 100 miles a day. So yeah, we made a feature length documentary about it too. So it's like, if you can imagine like 110 degrees, like we're on our second day. It's like, John, we need to go 95 miles today. And we're at like 40 miles. It's so hot. And we're just like going straight up the mountains. You leave the ocean, it's almost immediately up in California. And we're dying. And I'm like, hey, hold on. Let me get the camera out. I need to get some shots. He was just like, no, I'm not stopping. I'm not stopping. So yeah, it was sometimes, because also, I have this tiny travel tripod, like it was a bear. And actually, even on the third day, I said, let's Google where the closest airport is. Let's tell everyone that it's over. And like we failed. And that was something we were seriously considering. Honestly, we were probably saved by the fact that we decided to raise some money for a charity. So we had like people who had donated in like $18,000. So it was like, no, you can't actually just go to the airport and fly home. So yeah, we just started having to pick up more and more miles. And by the time we got to Kansas, I feel like we had really hit our stride and we had a number of, days over 100 miles in a row.
Man,
it was brutal though. There was like no days off. There was no days off.
What is the title of your documentary?
It's called How to Ride a Bicycle Across the USA.
How to, huh? You're going to give us some good tips?
Yeah, no, there's a lot of tips in there. Because I would really recommend it to anybody who's maybe interested. I would say don't do it in 45 days. Figure out a way to get 2 months off. Because there were so many things, so many opportunities like where people would invite us into their home and like, oh, let me show you around my small town that we just had to say no to. It was honestly heartbreaking. I mean, that would have been amazing too for, I guess that would have been a different style of documentary. The style we have is very much about the experience of seeing so much of the country in such a short period of time. And it is about the people we met as well. There's some, like in Colorado, being like way up in the mountains and meeting a prospector that looks exactly like the guy from, Toy Story 2, there's like the old prospector, spitting image of that man. And he talked the same way. It was just like, or just meeting characters and people inviting us into their homes, feeding us, like, it was just an amazing way to see the country.
Yeah. So, I mean, where did you stay? I mean, so going from West Coast to East Coast, that's a lot of nights. You know, you said 45 days. Where do you stay all those nights? Where do you charge your batteries? Where do you dump your footage?
Yeah. So I brought a lot of batteries. At the time, I was still shooting on, what did I bring? I brought a T3i. And so I really loaded up on batteries because I knew that charging was being an issue. We did have a solar panel, but that ended up not being fast enough to really charge camera batteries. We would stop at gas stations and because especially in those early days, like going through Nevada, there was times we went 70 miles without seeing anything. I mean, maybe a couple cars would pass, but it would be like 80. Just so you know, our maps would tell us like, just so you know, and for the next 80 miles, you're not going to see anybody. So it's like an entire day. And, but also I guess I would say it's like, I wasn't filming like really long shots that eat up a ton of footage or eat up a ton of battery. You know, it was like getting out the camera for a big landscape of the desert. And then, you know, we slowly ride by and then maybe some riding footage of this and that. And then at the end of the day, maybe just like some really short interviews, just like almost like little detail shots. I mean, with shooting every day for 45 days, we did a lot of the main interviews at the end. We did a lot of it beforehand, what we were expecting, but we did a lot of the interviews at the end for like, okay, day 10, here, I'm going to show you the footage. Tell me because I went with my brother. Tell me like what you were feeling in this. And we were able to kind of like pull out a lot of the narrative at the end afterward. And actually I also, because I love After Effects so much, I was able to do a lot of, I think, fun graphics at the end. Like, cause I didn't have like a good shot of like, our hands were completely purple, you know?
Right.
So like, I would do like example, I would like do examples or like talking about like something we learned is how exactly did, cause we weren't real cyclists. We were like just commuter cyclists who, you know, you ride here, you ride there. But it's like, you know, we learned very quickly that, you know, you have like 33% of your weight on your hands, 33% of your weight on your butt, 33% of your weight on your feet. Because if it's out of balance, something's going to get torn. Whatever you have too much pressure on is going to get torn up when you're riding for 12 hours a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, coast to coast, so 45 days worth of footage. You said you're doing kind of like short shots, but you still ended up with a lot of footage. What was editing like of all of this stuff? Like, how did you pull a story together?
Well, the hardest part was actually like editing for my real job. Because at the time I was just like, I mean, I did some assistant camera stuff, but mostly I was editing from 8 to 6 or 8 to 5 or something like that. And at the end, I would have to come home and start editing the documentary. That was the most difficult part, was editing it after a full day of editing, and then or on Saturdays and Sundays. But
we do have a viewer question real quick. Suzanne Zach is asking, where can we find your bicycle documentary?
So it was, so this is kind of a terrible thing, but it was on YouTube literally like 2 days ago, and I got a notification yesterday that there, because of, we used to dance at all the state signs, that because there was some copyrighted music in there, that they made it unavailable to see. So I'm gonna have to re-upload it. I think I'm gonna put it on Vimeo and see if maybe, or I could just take out that little bit of diegetic sound.
Well, and you yourself are a musician, right? Like you're a composer yourself. So do you want to talk about your own music at all?
Yeah. So my relationship with music has been, it's especially, as I think a lot of people go through this as a musician. Maybe you love it as a teenager, and then in college, you usually have a lot of other people with time on their hands, and you can make things with, in a community that's not too difficult to put together. And then you, when you graduate, and maybe people start having less free time, you know, as they have, you know, either 9 to 5s or they have children or whatever. So I made a lot of music. I was determined to at least make one album every year, but music is such a difficult thing to, I've never had the energy to actually like, you know, like try to put it out there like, oh, listen to my music. But it is something that is extremely therapeutic for me. And actually, so after that job at Order Another, when I went freelancing, ever since then, I don't think I've ever, you know, I've done a lot of editing work since then. And I've just used all my own music. And so I've never really had to license any music. any of the short films that I've produced. Yeah. And that's one of the great things about moving. So I had, you know, my freelance, I was busy. I was, you know, I had a lot of clients. I was working 7 days a week when I was those last couple of years in Detroit. And then I moved here and I essentially lost all of those clients, which was a really difficult decision, but I was very certain about my partner. And so when I was moving here, I knew that I was making the right decision, but there was some, obviously some difficulties there with who am I? If like, you know, if I've been, this is who I am. I've been editing, I've been shooting, you know, videos for, you know, all these people. Now I'm here. What am I going to do? And it really kind of opened me up to music in a new way, because when I don't have any work, I've been making music. I've been filming myself making music. So instead of doing music video, I'm doing like production videos. And so I've been doing one of those. Well, I guess I've done about 30 this year, which is a pretty intense schedule to, you know, it's usually on Sunday, I will come up with an idea for a song. On Monday, I'll let it just percolate a little bit. Tuesday, I'll, you know, pull out the gear. I'm usually recording a lot of the parts. Wednesday, editing. Thursday, editing. And then on Friday and Saturday, I'll show it to a couple friends, see what they think. And Sunday, a post, which has been a really different way to approach music, as opposed to like when you're just looking at a music DAW screen, a digital audio workstation, and being like, okay, where do I start? What do I do? Thinking about it, it's like, okay, I'm going to film everything. I'm going to record. And so it's been just a different way to approach it. And I'm happy to kind of fuse the two things I love most, music production and video production, with something so kind of not for anybody else except for me. I've really been able to go kind of crazy with animation in those and just doing silly design things, which I think silly is my aesthetic. I love anything that makes me feel like a kid again.
Yeah, well, and I think that's such an important lesson too. I personally have not moved to Malawi, but here we have been, you know, hit by the pandemic. And so, mm-hmm. you know, for me, I had kind of that moment of who am I without work, you know, for 3 months right after, you know, everything got shut down. I'd come right off of doing, you know, some crazy TV shows that just had me working around the clock. You know, and so like digging inside and being like, well, you know, why do I make art? Who, what am I even making art about? Who am I? I think it's like, you know, that's pretty important. And, you know, when you're just grinding towards something, you know, it just seems like, you know, the next step is the whole reason to do it, but not necessarily, maybe there's not, you know, that much wisdom in there. So I'm really glad you had that opportunity to learn about yourself. How did you even get to that point where you're moving out to Malawi and dropping those clients? You know, so you came back from riding across the country, you got your purple hands, you know, you got $800 footage to cut.
Riding the bicycle across the country, So people had kind of known I was into crazy things. And I had a friend of a friend who's like, I'm going to spend a year down in Latin America backpacking. And I'd like to not go alone. Like, would you like to come with me? And I had never met this guy, but I said, okay. And that would be 2005. And so that was kind of the beginning.
What got you, like, what happened next?
Well, I got a little bit of a reputation amongst my friends as someone who does crazy things, because I had also actually, when I was at Grand Valley, I rode my skateboard across Michigan, which is like 250 miles. And then I had done this trip. I had tried to ride my bicycle across the UP also when I was at Grand Valley, and that failed. So that was my first bicycle tour. I had never even heard of a bicycle tour. I was lamenting the last days of summer and decided I was going to ride across the UP. So there was a couple of these little experiments. And then after the...
So this is even before college, you backpacked across.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. 2015.
Okay, gotcha. So this is...
Okay. So this is after those jobs. I had been freelancing for 6 months and I had way more work than I had expected. So I was like, oh, actually, you know, I don't have that much responsibility. I don't have... My rent is, you know, my lease for the house I was renting was coming to an end. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I ended up only doing 9 months backpacking around Latin America because my brother got married and I came home for that.
Wow.
But this actually, the guy and I, we flew down to Guatemala and I think we spent maybe three days together. And then I was just like, I think I'm going to go do my own thing. Wow. He's like, yeah, me too.
We're taking a short break to tell you about the Dirk Koning Memorial Film and Video Scholarship. Here's Gretchen Vinich remembering Dirk Koning.
The Koning Scholarship enables students to get that kind of an education, to be a good filmmaker, to be able to express their voice, and to continue Dirk's dream.
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show.
We do have this picture of you in Latin America up on some rocks, right? You're just kind of all alone. Did you see many other people as you were backpacking across Latin America? What was that?
Yeah.
Who did you talk to? Who did you speak any? What do they speak in Latin America?
So, yeah, I spoke Spanish. I mean, not like incredibly fluent, but I had enough from speaking like 5 or 6 years between high school and Grand Valley. And yeah, so actually I met a lot of people from Europe, a lot of Australians, a lot of New Zealand people, like speaking of like the people who I was able to like relax and speak English with. And so, yeah, I made a number of friends. I had actually ended up spending a lot of time with this guy from New Zealand. And I think we traveled essentially on and off, like we'd meet up in different towns, but we spent a lot of time together between Nicaragua and even all the way down to Colombia.
Yeah.
But yeah, I made a lot of friends. I think it really expanded my worldview in a way that needed to happen. And honestly, it set me up for my next adventure, which was after that, I had met so many people in Europe. I mean, in pretty much every country, I said, okay, next thing I'm going to do is ride my bike around Europe. And so I went back, I freelanced for another 8 months or so, maybe a year. And I was saving up to go bike.
Were you freelancing here in the States?
Yeah. I came back to Michigan for my brother's wedding, and then I freelanced for about 9 months. Now, unfortunately, this is maybe the craziest thing that's happened to me since university. I had like really built up that same bicycle I took across the USA, but I had like kind of like just made everything better. And so I got on the plane to go to Germany. I was going to start in Berlin, and I had a layover in Portugal. When I got off the plane, I didn't have my passport. And to this day, I don't know what happened, but so I went to the passport control. It was just a layover for like, you know, an hour and a half. And they're like, oh, you don't have your passport. That's a crime in this country. I'm like, well, it's probably just on the plane. Like, it's probably just in the seat back, or it's probably just was underneath my butt. I was sleeping when the plane landed, you know? So I was like, they're like, oh, well, we're going to check the plane, but I don't think they did. And the guy who I had at the police station is like, you know, I hate Americans. I hate them so much.
Oh, no.
And he's like, it's my lucky day because the American embassy is on holiday today. I don't know why or what. It was some sort of Portuguese holiday. And so he said, I want to put you in a really nice hotel. He sends me to jail.
Wow.
Oh, it was terrible. And no one spoke English. I had no idea what was happening. I had all these plans for like what I was going to be doing in Berlin. I was ready to go to the theater. I had like really specced out everything I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I was in jail and no one would tell me what was exactly going on. The guy who managed the jail did speak a little English, and he came in and he's like, I've been running this place for 11 years and never has there been an American in here. This is for people they find on the streets who maybe were selling drugs and their visa has expired, and they stay in here until I forget exactly what the procedure was. And then they get sent back to their home country after 90 days if XYZ paperwork hasn't been done. So I was in there for a little bit over 2 days and I was just like sleeping on this floor. It was so hot. They were giving us one tiny water bottle a day. It was traumatic. It was, I mean, honestly, it was traumatic. Like I had some serious, like, I still have fear about police in a way that I've never had before, which I mean, I'm like the most privileged person in the world. And it's like, but man, I see a police officer now. I'm like real. It was because I just felt so absolutely no control. So they ended up putting me on a plane, not telling me anything. Like they'd taken my belt off so I didn't hang myself, like just all these weird things. They put me on a plane and they sent me back to, I just arrived in Boston. I had no information what was going on. They'd taken all my things. And when I got to the passport control there, some guy just like appeared out of nowhere and was like, here's this guy's things. And they searched it. And I just was like 1 a.m. in Boston. And it's like, now what? So I got a plane ticket back to Detroit. And I knew that I was going to be absolutely traumatized. And I was maybe never going to get on a plane again. So I bought a plane ticket for 2 days later and I didn't even have a passport.
Oh, wow.
So then I went to emergency passport control and said, hey, I have a plane ticket for 2 days from now. So I need a passport, emergency passport tomorrow. And they provided that, which is, I can't believe I did that. What a bold move. And I got on a plane just 2 days later back to Berlin, but they didn't have room for my bicycle. So I bought that. The bicycle you saw in that picture is like an old I mean, it was probably from the early 90s, a women's bicycle that I could find for 50 euro. And the gears broke on the first day. And the whole bicycle trip across Europe was just, it's just like watching something fail very slowly. the gears broke on the first day. Like, no, I mean, Germany, I was trying to learn some German, but like nobody spoke English in the middle of the country at all. So I was like sleeping under rocks. I was sleeping under like, you know, pine trees. I was just trying to find, and everyone in Germany, you know, they take the rules very seriously. So I was like pretty, you know, sleeping in some uncomfortable places where I was like, I hope I don't go back to jail.
Right.
Yeah.
So in Latin America and in Europe, are you making videos during this or is this all just for yourself?
In Latin America, I had the intention of making videos. You know, I had pretty much after college, I had always had a camera in my hand or around my neck. And I think in Latin America kind of made me start to be a little bit less so like holding on to every moment and like need to film this. Because like I ended up somehow my camera got smashed and then my laptop, someone spilled a rum and coke on my laptop. And like, and then my Kindle broke. Like it was just like all by the end, I felt like I was like a monk. Like I had like, it's like, I've given up all electronics, you know, but I came back so enthused. And actually the first 5 days I was back, I made, I think my favorite music I've ever made. Like that day I was just like on a mission and I was like, oh, okay. So I don't always have to be the guy capturing everything all the time. It was really nice to disconnect a little bit. And then when I went to Germany, I had a small camera I brought with me. But then after the police incident, I just like, I'm going total zen. You can see in the picture, I just have like a sleeping bag, water bottle, a tiny tent. It was very minimal.
Right, right. And it sounds like, you know, you're really, you know, kind of filling yourself up with, you know, like you said, you know, you're disconnecting, you're engaging with people, you're, you know, having these experiences that most people can only like read about or watch movies about, you know. And you said it created, you know, you created some of the best music that you've ever made. What did you like tap into? What did that music sound like? What, you know, what, how did this affect your art?
Well, I think everything before that was maybe like a little bit more moody, not all of it, but when I came back, it really sounds all very colorful. You know, if you can imagine like going around in like these old, because like the buses they use for public transit there are like old elementary school buses from the United States that are retired, sent down there, and they're like painted crazy colors. You know, they have all these interesting fabrics, and you know, people are coming on the bus with all sorts of animals, and there's music. So I think it was just like, to me, it sounds like a little bit more just like an explosion of color, but I'm not sure if other people would hear it exactly that way. It also, I think, is, I think I stopped taking myself so seriously.
Oh yeah. Was that your intent when you're taking these trips? And, you know, was it your intention to, you know, get to know yourself more, or is that just the result?
I think I was just looking for, I don't know what I was looking for, actually. I think I'd have to think about that. Certainly, I don't know. I think it probably shifted a number of times as well. Now I'm living in a country that, you know, where the culture is completely different.
Right.
And I think it suits me, the slower pace of life. It's similar in some ways, it's similar to Latin America, where things are much more, I perceive them as much more personable. Yeah, I mean, I like living in the mountains. I like having, we're next to an enormous lake, you know, it's not Lake Michigan, but it's pretty close. It's also very beautiful. I've have a new community. Like here you can see I joined the basketball team. Yeah, I have one thing I'd like to transition to. So I came back from the Europe trip, and then it was only about a year later that I went to Tanzania and met my partner. So I met her there.
Why did you go out to Tanzania?
I was one of my clients who was a producer who hired me a lot was just like, hey, you've done a lot of paid work for us. We're doing a film about this NGO in Tanzania. And would you edit it for, you know, free? I said, okay, yeah. Like they'd given me so much work and yeah, occasionally do some free stuff. And so I had edited it. And then I was so impressed with the interview. I was like, wow, these people are amazing. I'd like to meet them. Like, we're actually going to go back and film an update video in a year. So they invited me to come with them. I was going to shoot some footage. And so I went, and I was there. And those, you know, those last, honestly, it was like 6 days I really talked to Amari. That's my partner's name. Before I decided that I was going to shut down my business in Detroit and move. But she, you know, she was also thinking about switching careers. She went, or switching jobs. So she was going to move from Tanzania. She was looking at some jobs in Malawi, which is where we were at. So she resigned and I kind of went home. I finished up all my commitments that I had left. But I had also just, I found a van for like $1,100 or $1,200. And I just put my bed in the back. I built out, put some lights in the top. I just took some of the furniture from my bedroom and put it into the back of the van. So she didn't have a job yet. She was just like applying for jobs. So we said, okay, we could live in this for 6 months. Yeah. And so we traveled around the US. She met all of my friends and family and closest friends. I was able to meet a lot of her family and her closest friends. It was like a really, everyone thought we were crazy. It's like, you guys met in Tanzania. You knew each other for 5 days or 6 or 7 days, something like that, when you decided to like be life partners. And now you guys are traveling around in this van. And on the second day of van life, though, we found it wasn't going to be 6 months because she had gotten the position in Malawi. So we said, okay. So it was like 6 or 7 weeks that we lived in the van. It was amazing. I'd like to do it again, but you know, whenever there's maybe another transition. Yeah. So that was kind of, this is, I guess, the new, I don't even know if you call it an adventure anymore. It feels more like just life. But the big thing that we're doing now is actually, we just bought a little bit of land here and we're building a house. I'm building a music studio, video studio, and it's at the base of that mountain that you just saw. And yeah, we're starting a farm because in the last year, I think all of us have become a little bit more aware of climate change. And I've been thinking a lot more about what I'm consuming. And I have the luxury here that I'm buying a lot of things without plastic, you know, like being able to go to a spice shop and be able to buy all my beans or my rice, all my spices. And yeah, so we started thinking about, well, what's the next natural step? And it was like, well, what if we grew our own food? And that's kind of the direction we're going in. And I'm thinking that also that's a pretty good well for like, in terms of like making films, is like, if we're gonna have a farm, I'm gonna be learning a lot. I've been learning a lot about farming this year, going into farming, but like I don't wanna lose like the idea, like, you know, the video aspect. Like there's a lot to share here. Like what can we learn about growing our own food and how can that affect maybe give our friends the information or skills that they need to maybe live a little bit more sustainably.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like art, you know, has either, you know, been woven through all of this or you know, has gotten you to, you know, the next step, whether it's, you know, taking the video out to Tanzania or, you know, trying to make a video across the United States. How do you see the stuff that you learned at Grand Valley as, you know, how did it prepare you or, you know, are there things that you wish you had known at Grand Valley?
Well, I guess the first thing would be in the same way that Latin America, like that backpacking trip there really kind of expanded my worldview. I would say the same thing happened at Grand Valley, especially in those first couple of years, you know, really made me challenge some of the things that I thought I knew as like the big mature 18-year-old that I was. After that, I'm really thankful for a lot of the classes. The class that most takes me, like reminds me of like still, like I still hear Kim Roberts' voice in my head from film, video, art. Because I just remember at the beginning, she's like, you just have to learn something new this week and make a film. This is how I remember it, at least. Learn something new and make a film using that knowledge. I feel like that's still what I'm doing with like these beat videos that I'm doing every week. And I just remember so appreciating the structure of that, but also the freedom of it. And I think that was, you know, everyone maybe has a little bit of a different recipe for to get the creative juices flowing. But I noticed at that time that was really effective for me. And I still try to recreate that, you know, that scenario in my head.
Yeah, sure. It sounds like you're learning new stuff just about every day out there, huh? Do you have any like collaborators that you're working with? So you said you're like building a music studio. Your website is, of course, up there if people want to see, you know, some of the work you've done. What, like, who are you collaborating with out there? And, you know, is it just going to be you in the studio or other people? Or what is the music in Malawi?
Yeah, the longer I'm here, I mean, as a foreigner, like it takes some time for people to trust you because there's, you know, a lot of foreigners, they come in, they leave really quick and maybe they're just like extracting, especially with a camera, right? They're extracting little images. There's a huge culture here of like, don't let a white person take a picture of you because they're going to go back to America and tell everyone they're going to feed this child. Mm-hmm. But you'll never receive that food, right? It's going to go to someone else. So, it's really about building community first and slow, you know, as I have a community here of friends and people who are essentially family to me. Mm-hmm. I've been pulling them into the videos, and in even more now than ever, people are knocking at the gate and being like, let's collaborate. And so that's been really excited. Like, I have a lot of things that are coming up, but you know, you can only film so fast. You can only, especially since it's just like a one man crew. I did just have a neighbor who moved here from the UK who is a audio engineer, and he also does film stuff. So I'm hoping he can help me, because there's so many talented musicians and artists here that just don't have access to cameras, microphones, and anything. And so there's like a huge need for people who have some technical equipment, technical skills to like capture that and help them share what they're good at. So yeah, it's something that I feel like I'm just starting to do in the last like 6 months. I've just got to that like level of trust with like a certain community. And now that people see it, it's kind of like, you know, starting to roll forward. And like doing karaoke in the community, I'm the first karaoke DJ in town. So like, you know, like people start to know you from just like doing other things, like, you know, karaoke DJ. People come up, they sing. I've heard some amazing singers. I'm like, we got to get you on a track. So yeah, it's been really great. And just also people who aren't artists, just neighbors, they come over and I'll ask them to like sing something, or like, if you had to write a song, what would it be about? And like, there's some things like that coming up as well.
Yeah, really given that platform, that sounds like just what a great life. Do you have any words you want to say to current students, or, you know, something that you wish? I mean, obviously now you've traveled many, many miles. You've had a lot of experiences that, you know, like I said, most people won't even be able to experience or read about. What, you know, what would you have told your college self?
Now, this is very just like finance based, but I would say that I just felt like there's always editing work. People always like, oh, and obviously a lot of it's not glamorous. It's just like, oh, we shot all this terrible footage. Now we need someone to go through, you know, 10 hours of terrible footage and put together a 5-minute video. I just feel like there's always editing work if you are putting yourself out there and editing things. And when I went freelance, you know, I enjoy pretty much all aspects of filmmaking, but editing was what I chose just because I was trying to play it safe, and it made me feel a little bit more comfortable. Like, oh, I think I'll be able to pay the rent with this. And yeah, I think that's true. I think that there's a lot of things that need to be edited out there. And I think that it felt like job security going into editing for me.
Yeah, well, and certainly
the other thing I just say is After Effects is just the playground, everyday's playground. I love After Effects so much, and it's getting slow right now. I don't know if you were in After Effects, but some of the more recent updates are slow. But I just can't leave it because it's such a wonderful playground.
Well, I'm really glad that you've been able to, you know, dig deep inside and, you know, really discover some of this inspiration for your art. I, you know, really love watching your journey out there. And I'm glad we got to share some of this with people out there. So keep up the great work, and, you know, maybe we'll come see you in Malawi someday.
Thanks, Randy. It's been nice to catch up.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to me.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.